This is an iHeart podcast.
Government throwing pro-lifers in jail. We have Congressman Thomas Massie joining us. Former FBI agents. The show is jam-packed tonight on I'm Right. You know, they found a terrorist. And I don't mean they found him at the border. They were all, whoa, this is a terrorist. No, no, no. They found him at the border. And then he was allowed to roam free within the borders of the United States of America for a year before they finally tracked him down again. You might have been pumping gas at the gas station right next to somebody who would like to chop your head off on video. And so that stuff happens and it makes people look around and say, oh my gosh, how could that happen? How could they not catch him? When we look at what's happening overseas right now, well, why are we not keeping Iran in check? Oh, these China's going crazy. Why aren't we keeping China in check? People look around and they ask, why isn't the government doing something? Why isn't the Biden administration doing something? Why aren't they attacking? We have enemies here on our southern border and enemies on there and enemies there. Why aren't they attacking our enemies? Well, they are. Except you think you have different enemies than they do. You see, you are correct in who the enemies of America truly are. But for the people who run the government, president, FBI, DHS, CIA, the people who run the national security apparatus of America, the reason they're not interested in terrorists on the southern border is to them, the terrorist is you.
From a terrorism perspective, I think domestic violent extremism is one of the greatest terrorism-related threats that we face.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
Why didn't the FBI track down a terrorist, a dangerous terrorist, who was roaming here for a year? Well, the FBI, they only have so much time. They only have so much manpower. They have to tackle the true terrorists of this nation, at least in their eyes. Terrorists who pray outside of abortion clinics. Those people, 50 to 70, arrested, convicted, facing up to 11 years in federal prison. The federal government that allows terrorists to roam free. They allow Antifa, Black Lives Matter, street animals to loot, burn, shoot in this country, cities like Seattle and others. They actually are paying millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter street animals. Yet here in the United States of America, it is pro-lifers who read Bible verses and sing worship songs who are hunted down by the FBI like Paul Vaughn was here in this video.
But if you're not going to let me, then I'll just...
No, I want to know why you were banging on my door with a gun. You're not going to tell me anything?
No, we're not. I tried, ma'am.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You did not try. Can I have your name? You're not going to give me your name? You're not going to give me any information?
Pretty sobering view of where we are as a nation, no? Joining me now, she's been all over this story, Mary Margaret Olihan. She is senior reporter for the Great Daily Signal. Okay, Mary, before we get to Paul Vaughn and the evil demons in the Justice Department, what is the FACE Act anyway? What is this weird thing? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, the FACE Act is the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, and it's a 1994 piece of legislation that allegedly is supposed to protect both abortion clinics, pregnancy centers, and Catholic churches. And the point of it is that you're not supposed to obstruct someone from trying to get an abortion, but you're also not supposed to harm a Catholic church or pregnancy center in an effort to criticize them for being pro-life. Well, the Department of Justice has only used the FACE Act to prosecute pro-lifers. We've seen maybe, I could count on one hand the amount of times they've used the FACE Act to prosecute pro-abortion vandals. And since the overturn of Roe v. Wade, we've seen hundreds of attacks on Catholic churches and pregnancy centers that have gone really unprosecuted by the Department of Justice. Meanwhile, we have incidents like the one you just showed where pro-life fathers, particularly of big families, multiple instances of pro-life fathers from big families being arrested by President Joe Biden's FBI and DOJ for their pro-life work in front of abortion clinics.
Mary, I don't need a specific number, but 1994 was quite a while ago, about 30 years, if my math is correct on that. How many times was the FACE Act used for any reason against any side prior to Roe v. Wade? Was it a lot? Was it a little?
I don't have exact numbers, but I can tell you that during the Obama administration, from my review of the DOJ's data on this, the Obama administration used the FACE Act on a number of occasions to prosecute pro-lifers who had behaved violently towards abortion clinics. But since the Dobbs leak and since the overturn of Roe v. Wade, we've seen Kristen Clark, the Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division, I believe, at the Department of Justice. Kristen Clark, who, by the way, is pro-abortion openly and has said that pregnancy centers are harming women. Kristen Clark has used the FACE Act to prosecute over 26 pro-life individuals just in 2022. In 2023, there were a whole bunch more, and now we are seeing yesterday that six pro-life activists were found guilty by a jury of violating the Freedom of Access to Abortion Clinic Entrances, or the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. And, you know, Mark Houck is the father of seven kids who we interviewed. He was arrested at gunpoint in front of his family for his pro-life work. Paul Vaughn, who is one of the pro-life activists found guilty by the jury yesterday, happens to be the father of 11 kids, and he also was arrested in front of his family for his pro-life work. And the Biden administration has been very open about the fact that this is a response to the overturn of Roe v. Wade. You can look at their press releases. They literally say, we are going to use the FACE Act to prosecute pro-lifers as a response to Roe. And they have been doing it, and they've been doing it a lot.
I just want everyone to digest what Mary just said there. In response to a Supreme Court decision the president didn't like, they sent the DOJ after their political opponents. Just wanted to make sure everyone knew what kind of country you live in now. Okay, Kristen Clark. From what I understand, she was appointed by Joe Biden. From my very 30,000-foot understanding of her, she's dedicated her entire adult life to various communist causes, from illegal immigration to racial politics to everything. This woman is, well, is she alone in the DOJ, or are there a lot of her?
So she's heading the Civil Rights Division, and she specifically is the one that, you know, you look at these DOJ releases on the FACE Act prosecutions, and it will say that Kristen Clark led this investigation, that Kristen Clark is quoted in the press release talking about what an important case it was. In the example of Paul Vaughn and these other pro-life activists that were charged with violating the FACE Act, Kristen Clark is heralding it as this amazing investigation into a horrific thing that these anti-abortion zealots were doing at this abortion clinic. Well, if you watch the video, Jesse, you'll see that these guys were sitting in the hallway outside of an abortion clinic. They were praying and singing and asking women not to abort their baby. Now, you know, the FACE Act does say that you are not allowed to obstruct a woman from getting an abortion. However, you know, we have these people, you can see what they're doing. They're praying, they're singing, they're sitting out in the hall outside of an abortion clinic. So it does kind of make you scratch your head and say, is that worthy of 11 years in prison, which is what they're now facing? These parents, pro-life activists, religious Americans who believe that abortion is murder. So, you know, I've spoken to some of the people that were at the courthouse yesterday. I've spoken to Paul, and a lot of these pro-lifers are saying, we don't understand. We believe that abortion is murder. And these people are going into the abortion clinic to murder their baby. And yet the Department of Justice is saying, oh, you that prayed outside the abortion clinic, you're the one that's going to go to jail for 11 years.
Mary, you're the one who's been doing the reporting on this. I certainly have not. You've been talking to these people, as you just pointed out. How are they handling all this? It's not every day you wake up at the age of 73 and you're facing 11 years in the clink. Are they holding up?
Well, I spoke with Paul Vaughn last night, and he seemed to be holding up well. I've heard from a lot of these pro-life activists, and they are a very prayerful bunch. And I don't mean that facetiously. They legitimately are very trusting in God that he's going to take care of them throughout this ordeal. I've seen a lot of their messages to each other. They're praying for each other. They're supporting. They'll quote passages from the Bible and Psalms. They just are very convicted that God cares about these pro-life activists that are undergoing this trial and that God's going to take care of them. And it's frankly very impressive to see their trust.
How about that? Mary, thank you. Stay on this. We'll have you back. I appreciate you very much. How about that? Keep those families, keep those people in your prayers. They need them right now, being attacked by a bunch of very, very evil people. All right? All right, we have a huge show, a gigantic show. We still have Thomas Massie. We have former FBI. We have a huge show. Before we get to any of that, though, you remember what Janet Yellen said a few days ago? She is the Treasury Secretary. Remember what she said? Forever they were talking about how they're going to get inflation down. Why? Yeah, we'll get a soft landing. And we'll get rates down. We'll get inflation down. And then overnight, they talked to Janet Yellen about it. And she said, well, look, we're not going to get inflation down. And I'll be honest with you, we're not even really trying. They're not even pretending like we're going to go back to where we were with the dollar. It just gets worse and worse and worse. What do we do? What can you do? You have to buy things they can't destroy. But these people destroy everything, right? What can't they destroy? They've never destroyed precious metals. Nobody ever has, ever. If I were to give you a box of silver coins from Oxford Gold Group and send you 2,000 years into the past, it would be worth a fortune. 2,000 years into the future, it would be worth a fortune. It's the one thing these evil people can't touch. Let Oxford send you some, please. You don't have to go nuts. Something. 833-995-GOLD. Let them take care of you. Oxford Gold Group, tell them I told you to call. They will take special care of you, I promise. 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Well, the January 6th stuff seems to get worse and worse and worse the further we get from January 6th, and not because of the events that happened that day, because of the government's involvement. Are we allowed to even put it that way now? Somehow involved? I don't know how bad. I know Congressman Thomas Massie is one of the few who have the guts to actually tackle it. Let's get to him now. Congressman, okay, the pipe bomb thing. It's been weird for 3 years. It's somehow getting even weirder. You can't access, you can't geolocate the cell phone data just for that specific area at that time. Now we're hearing it might be a former government guy. Okay, you're the one with the information. What are we missing here?
Yeah, well, you know, for 2 years, the Democrats controlled everything, the video here in the House. And when we took the majority, my staff took the time to go over and watch these videos, which haven't been released. I mean, all of these videos should be released, but in the meantime, we can watch them. And my staff identified the discovery of the second pipe bomb. And we found some very strange anomalies about the discovery of the pipe bomb. And I see on the screen there, you're showing the suspect of January 5th. Well, I asked Stephen D'Antuono, the assistant director of the FBI in charge of the DC field office, you know, did you use geolocation of the cell phone data to find out who that suspect is? And he said, I don't want to cause any conspiracy theories, but the data was corrupted. from the cell phone provider. You know what's interesting about that is they had no trouble using that cell phone data to arrest the protesters on January 6th, but they can't use the cell phone data because it was corrupted to find that suspect that you're showing on the screen. So that's one of the oddities. The other thing is, if that suspect that's on the screen there actually planted those bombs, it was 17 hours before they were discovered, and they had 60-minute kitchen timers on them. I've asked the FBI, how in the world does a 60-minute kitchen timer set off a bomb 17 hours later? And they say two things at the same time, which can't both be true. They say that the bombs were viable, and then they also say that there's no way a 60-minute kitchen timer can set a bomb off 17 hours later. That and many other odd things going on here.
Congressman, not that I expect you to be a tech wizard. Obviously, you have bigger fish to fry, but I want to circle back to this corrupted. The cell phone data was corrupted. Yeah. Now, I don't know anything about tech. I can hardly text message people. Does that mean the data was on a piece of paper and someone spilled a cup of coffee on it? How exactly does data get corrupted, especially critical data like that?
Well, I think we need to follow up on that with the cell phone provider, because every modern data system I know of has backups. So I'm not sure in what way that it would have been corrupted. And, you know, one of the reasons I got that information from this FBI director was because he's already retired. Most of them, if they're still in the employment of the FBI, will say, oh, that's an ongoing investigation and we're not going to comment. But we're 3 years into this. So I think we're going to have to go to the cell phone providers and find out for ourselves what happened. The other oddity that I just confirmed is an oddity yesterday is that the person who discovered the second pipe bomb was a plainclothes police officer. Yeah, there's the video of it. The person in there with the backpack on that walks up to the two cruisers, first to the Metro Police Department cruiser, then to the Secret Service detail cruiser that was supposed to be there protecting Kamala Harris, the incoming vice president. Well, that's a Capitol Hill police officer. So why does it take 4 minutes for the Secret Service to respond to being notified? That person with the backpack went up to those cruisers, as I suspected, but just confirmed yesterday, and told them, hey, there's a bomb over here. But it's like they finish their lunch before they get out of the car and come over. You know, you have to show it and fast forward to make it look like there's even half a sense of urgency. And they let school children walk by the bomb. You know, that begs the question, were they just, I don't know, I don't want to say incompetent. I don't know what the reason is for, maybe they didn't believe it was viable, but I think they should have thought it at that time, because they 15 minutes before had responded to another pipe bomb that's about four blocks from there.
Yeah, I think incompetent is being about as kind as we can possibly be, Congressman. With everything laid out in front of us, I'm not going to sit here and say the government planned and coordinated their own Reichstag fire, but between this, the Epps stuff, the everything else, it looks like the federal government was involved in January 6th in some way and then used it to arrest their political opponents for 3 years. Do I have something wrong there?
Well, by the way, let me tie it with the Ray Epps thing, because, you know, I've asked Merrick Garland about Ray Epps in a hearing. I asked Christopher Wray about the discovery of the second pipe bomb in a hearing. But the discovery of the first pipe bomb happened 5 minutes before the breach of those bicycle racks where Ray Epps was present. So there's a theory that I think has some credibility that whoever put these bombs there didn't really intend to blow people up. They intended to distract resources and manpower to make it easier to breach the Capitol. And so the unlikely timing of the discovery of the first bomb leads to that. Also, allegedly, when Ray Epps was first interviewed by the FBI, he said that he stayed on the main streets and avoided the side streets and brought a first aid kit because he was afraid there would be explosions on side streets. Now, how did Ray Epps have a premonition of these pipe bombs and then tell the FBI about his premonition? That's some very specific information.
Yeah, that is interesting stuff. Congressman, thank you so much. We keep you all day. I appreciate you. You are one of the good ones. Jeez. These people are so corrupt, I'm telling you. All right. You know who else is corrupt? these dirty timeshare companies. That's who's corrupt. They are. They scam people. They tell people, oh, come on in. Oh, enjoy your timeshare. We'll get you some pina coladas on the beach. And then eventually they know you're going to be done with the timeshare. Hopefully you did enjoy it a while. Some people never enjoyed it at all, but hopefully you enjoyed it a while. You went out. And that's where they drop it. That's where they drop the bomb on you. Oh, sorry. Out? No, 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 no. You own this for life. Pay your annual fees. Are you going through this right now? You're not stuck in your timeshare. You're not. Lone Star Transfer, they're your path to freedom. They're what you didn't know was out there. A family business. You know how successful they are getting people legally and permanently out? 99%. 99% of the time, you call Lone Star Transfer, you're gone. They've heard your story. They know it. They'll win for you. Call them, 844-310-2646. All right? We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I have outstanding news. Maybe you think when it comes to the FBI, it's all bad news. Ah, it's this secret state police agency. It's only attacking people on the right. You'd be wrong. I have information for you. They're now offering a $500,000 reward for the pipe bomber who set out some pipe bombs like 3 years ago. And maybe you're asking yourself, why the reward now? That's an interesting question. In fact, there are a lot of interesting questions about this seriously impressive individual who's been able to avoid law enforcement now for 3 years. Who is this master sleuth? Joining me now, Kyle Serafin, FBI whistleblower, host of The Kyle Serafin Show. Steve Friend, another FBI whistleblower, host of American Radicals. Kyle, let's begin with you. I am so inspired that the FBI is now, just a few years later, they're going to hunt this guy down. That's awesome. Where do you think they'll find him?
It's hard to say, you know, after 3 years. Could be anywhere. Could be Panama. Could be in Russia. Could be in China. We're dealing with a law enforcement agency that was so concerned about a day, January 6th, that it's the biggest case that they've ever worked. And they decided to just focus on the most terroristic act that happened on that day 3 years after the fact. So that's pretty wild. Also, we've got guys like Steve D'Antuono out there who are giving sworn testimony saying that Kyle Serafin doesn't know what he's talking about, except I'm also not a case agent, so I don't know what I'm talking about. It's a fun time to be alive, Jesse.
It is a fun time. In fact, we have a little clip of this guy who was Kyle's boss at the time. He was talking about the pipe bombs. He said this.
I want to stress that the FBI has a long memory and a broad reach. Agents and our partners are on the streets investigating leads not only here in the D.C. area, but also across the country through the FBI's 56 field offices. So even, like I've said before, so even if you've left D.C., agents from our local field offices will be knocking on your door if we find out that you are part of the criminal activity at the Capitol. But before we do this, this is your opportunity to come forward.
That's exciting stuff, Steve. But from my understanding, he didn't even know, as supposedly someone in charge, whether or not these pipe bombs were operational. Is that normal for somebody in that position to not know basic information like that?
Unfortunately, it's very common for people in that position not to know anything about casework as it comes. Here's the little known secret in the FBI. If you want to promote to the upper echelons of that pyramid, you have to start that process very early in your career because mandatory retirement at age 57. So what you do is you do the bare minimum amount of time in an actual agent role, and then you take your temporary duty assignment to headquarters, and then you're on your way. And the bare minimum is normally around 6 years. There are some exceptions. Like now, there's the Sanjay Vermani, who's the special agent in charge of counterterrorism in Washington, D.C. He actually has 3 years of on-the-ground experience in cybercrime in San Francisco, and he's now sitting atop the arguably the most important counterterrorism position in the federal government. What could possibly go wrong?
Could you, before I get back to Kyle about the pipe bomber, could you tell me a little bit more about this person? How could somebody like that, with such minimal experience and just a tiny little sliver of counterterrorism, how could someone like that rise to such an important position of power so quickly? Is it a merit-based thing?
I don't think there's a whole lot of merit that goes into it. I think we joke amongst ourselves, Kyle, me, and the other suspended FBI whistleblowers. We say that if you want to promote in the FBI, you just never say no to a bad idea. You have to do something that briefs well. You never have to come up with anything that's actually effective at pushing the mission forward to actually pursuing bad guys. You just invent a solution and then find a problem to apply it to.
Okay, let's go back to the pipe bomber real quick here, Kyle. I'm being told that they didn't interview the guy, that they actually have somebody they suspect and didn't interview him. Is that right?
Didn't interview him. What's a couple of words between friends, just basic confusion by the guy who was the top of the Washington field office and theoretically said, Kyle is totally wrong about the things that he's briefed and he's shared with Congress. But also, I don't know anything about what I'm talking about because I'm the top guy. Like, top guy doesn't need to be bothered with detail. As far as I know, there's a couple of basic points that need to be hammered home. Number one, my team was briefed that they were inert devices like the week after it happened when we were sitting on a person of interest. I don't have any belief that person of interest is the pipe bomber, but it's a great starting point. And if Steve D'Antuono can't say that person was definitively interviewed and that lead was ruled out in a closed interview with members of Congress that have oversight on the DOJ and the FBI, then like what planet are we living on right now? We're living in this alternate time zone. And the information of the FBI going forward and saying, yeah, these are legit devices, these are quote unquote viable, I'm sure it hinges on some federal definition of the word viable. There's like a checklist for viability, like has initiation device, has bomb-like material or look, has wires, would pass for IED training. And then they said, yeah, that was viable. They never said whether it could explode, which is what he actually claimed. And I was told otherwise. And the reason it was relevant to us, Jesse, is because we were out in public following around a person of interest that supposedly had access to this individual you're showing on the screen. And when you do that, you kind of want to know if that person might be throwing a bomb at you when you're a surveillance agent and you're going to get close. It's going to change the way your tactics look. So it was a simple officer safety question that we had. And it's been confirmed to me by members of that team at the time that we were all briefed on the same thing. Because you never really know, 3 years later where things came from. But it's like, yeah, everybody came up with the same answer. We were all briefed on this because it was a safety issue. We didn't want to get too close to somebody that was going to detonate like they did the bomber in Austin. And also, can we just ask, how is it that this person dropped two bombs on a very, very important day and has never dropped another bomb in D.C. again? Like, was that their Super Bowl? And then now they're living in Argentina or something with a fake name? I don't get it, because this is not how bombers act in public.
That's a good question, Kyle. And in fact, Steve, that leads me to a question for you. You were in law enforcement forever. I've been to D.C. many, many times, and one of the things that hits you, especially up around Capitol Hill, is the cameras. My goodness, they're everywhere. You feel like you're in a Las Vegas casino. There are cameras pointed at every square inch of the thing. And again, I don't want to speak out of turn here. You correct me. I'm not a cop. Shouldn't it be easier for the FBI to track somebody like this down in a city where every square inch and every second is recorded at all times? How have they not found this individual? Was it his mask?
Well, I think we've been reliably informed that anything that goes on at nighttime, the DOJ has problems with, as evidenced by the fact that they haven't charged anyone who's attacking a pro-life center. But this is just more, it indicates how the FBI is really woefully incompetent at carrying forward logical investigations. Look, here's an assumption that's been thrown out there. They're connecting the Capitol event to the pipe bomb. They're assuming facts, not in evidence. This is a violent crime. I assume that there was, I don't know, a carjacking in Southeast D.C. that day. Are we going to assume that that was related to the Capitol as well? But we've always connected these very separate incidents. And the fact that they're doing that, they're assuming facts, not in evidence. And it's just more proof that the FBI is not really good at caring for investigations. What they are good at is getting headlines, which is why we see a headline where the FBI charges someone in Russia who they don't even know his last name, but they indict him on a war crime because that gets them a good headline. Or they're good at generating fake stats, where they're taking a case from Kyle's old stomping grounds in Las Cruces, New Mexico, where somebody robbed a Lowe's home repair center of an air conditioner for $500. But the FBI found its way to get into it because they said that that air conditioner crossed state lines, or he used a gun that crossed state lines. So we're going to juke the stats up and we're going to get headlines, but we're not actually going to carry out effective investigations, you know, like stopping someone who potentially could have killed the vice president-elect.
Kyle, more of a concept question than anything else, but Steve brought up the pro-lifers. We've played already on this show video of FBI guys all kitted out, taking down some pastor with his wife and five kids. You're an FBI guy. You're a door kicker. You got into this career to stop bad guys, probably get a little adrenaline out of it. I know what motivates guys like you. What are you thinking in the briefing room when they come in and they say, hey, we're taking down a pastor today with no criminal record. We're not going to arrest him as he gets the mail. We're going to pound on his front door and stick a rifle in his face. Aren't you grossed out by that?
Yeah, I think it's disgusting. I thankfully was never put in that position because I feel like that would have probably been my last day sitting in the team room before that sort of discussion. But I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I don't know how you think. We always kind of have this joke. The suspendables get together and we have this like back, you know, channel discussion. And it's like, is that what you signed up to do? Really? That's where you think you're gonna serve this country, is by going after people who represent no physical threat? How about the people that are knocking down all these J6 doors? There's a lot of people that had no violent history that are in touch with the FBI that have volunteered themselves, and then we still have to go out and make an example out of them. When you are someone who participates, like the process is in fact the punishment that you're looking for, if you're the vengeance of this government, you should be ashamed of yourself. And it's the reason why every single member of our little whistleblower crew have all lighted on the same situation. That ordinary men, that's how we get the Holocaust. It's straightforward stuff. You follow orders because that's your job. And the result is, I guess the entire country fails, but at least you'll have a pension. It's the saddest and the most disgusting thing. The people who are otherwise honorable, but they're easily corrupted over and over by tiny little yeses when they should have said no. Somebody should have been throwing the flag on this stuff. And the fact that it's not happening and we haven't had them reach out to us, it just tells us how corrupt the agency is. It's not the senior executives that are going and knocking down these doors. It's frontline agents, whether you call them brick agents or rank and file, whatever you want to use. It's the regular guys and gals that work the jobs like me and Steve that are the ones that are responsible for the tyrannical push into the American people's heart right now. And there's a reason why people are not trusting and while they're scared of the FBI. And that's it. It's failure to refuse those unlawful, illegal, or moral, unethical sort of orders.
That's true. Kyle, Steve, appreciate you boys as always. Thank you so much. All right. Well, the FBI is one thing. That's bad. What if the biggest, most powerful spy agency in the world, what if it's corrupt too? It is. J. Michael Waller is going to join us next and discuss the rot within the walls of the biggest spy agency on the planet. Hang on.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
It's probably good to check in with the largest, most powerful spy agency on the planet. What are they up to? Are they out there tracking down terrorists, getting the inside info on China? Well, we We actually have a little something from the CIA director. Quote, we're also working hard to diversify our workforce, reaching historic highs in 2023 in terms of the number of women and minority officers hired, as well as the number promoted into the agency's most senior ranks. Wow. I feel so much better about where we are as a nation. Joining me now, author J. Michael Waller. He wrote the book called Big Intel. You want to know how the CIA, FBI transformed from being maybe decent to freaking awful? Might want to go pick up that book, Big Intel. Okay, J. Michael, explain to me exactly how the DEI mind virus got into the CIA.
Oh, it's kind of like water getting into your, you know, under your roof or rust in your car. It just sort of crept in and rotted away from the inside, waiting for a time when it could be imposed from the top and then pulled upward. So it happened really, it started happening right after 9/11 when President George W. Bush centralized our intelligence community and teed things up for somebody like Barack Obama to come in and grab the radicals who were being enlisted right after 9/11, put them up into senior and mid-levels of management, using DEI as the excuse to diversify the management structure of the intelligence community.
Can you walk through, for people who don't understand exactly what happened there, what exactly did George Bush do after 9/11 to centralize all this? Because this is a story I've heard time and time again. Bush came in and paved the road for Obama to wreck it all.
Right. The intelligence community was set up. It's many different agencies. There were 17 after 9/11. And they were always apart from one another so that they would not be powerful enough to threaten our constitutional government. So, but in the name of protecting the country against terrorists internally, President Bush had the FBI become centralized from the top. So whereas the field agents, there are 56 field offices around the country, they would originate the cases. Now headquarters is initiating the cases with 63 new management positions up there. So the FBI then became this giant, top-heavy, command-driven organization. Meanwhile, you had the intelligence community now put under one roof, under the Director of National Intelligence, to coordinate everything. And then the huge Department of Homeland Security set up, piecing together existing agencies and creating new ones under a single roof, with the Patriot Act on top of that. But Congress and Bush knew that the Patriot Act was dangerous to the country over a long time. So that was supposed to sunset out and go away, but Congress kept renewing it. So boom, fast forward to Obama. He comes in and he starts imposing executive orders to put, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion and whatever other, you know, critical theory, cultural Marxist ideas in. And he puts radicals in charge of the FBI and the CIA and the overall Director of National Intelligence. So they imposed it all from the top down. Never once saying it's going to improve our intelligence capabilities or explaining how it would. It's simply diversity for diversity's sake.
Of course. A lot of people have forgotten about this story, and that's understandable because there's a new scandal every day. I have not. A story came out recently that the Central Intelligence Agency, a bunch of analysts received payment to change their story about where COVID came from. The analysts looked and said, oh, wow, it's a lab. And then the checks cleared and they were all, well, I guess it wasn't a lab. Please tell me I'm misremembering all this, J. Michael.
I wish you were misremembering it, Jesse, but I mean, imagine the billions and billions we spend every year to have the what we hope is the world's best foreign intelligence service to provide our leaders with the best information and analysis so that we can advance the country's interests and safeguard ourselves at home. And you have this pandemic that has killed how many Americans and destroyed how many jobs and wrecked how many families? And the CIA can't find where it originated because they said in their explanation, we can't find out because the Chinese authorities won't cooperate with us. So then, as you said, some intelligence analysts concluded, hey, we think that it actually came from this lab, the Wuhan Institute of Virology lab. And then there were some financial incentives put in for them to change the conclusion of their analysis. I mean, this is a crime. This is a betrayal of all of us because rather than have just honest intelligence, even if it's flawed, even if it's a low degree of certainty, it's still honest intelligence with the conclusions honestly arrived at. No. Now it's being bribery from the top down to perpetuate a myth or even a lie.
J. Michael, can you talk about this Director for Intelligence Programs in the UNRWA? You had something up the other day that was pretty revealing about just how compromised this government is.
Right. You think it can't, you think cultural Marxism in our intelligence community isn't bad enough. Now you have a Hamas man who worked for the UN agency that has been found to be not only funding Hamas, but having its employees participate in acts of terrorism. He is now the senior director for intelligence programs as special assistant to the president of the United States at the White House National Security Council staff. There he is. Maher Bitar, he's from Palestinian background, and you know, there's no problem where your ethnicity or ancestry is. The problem is, do you still have an allegiance to that place where you renounce when you immigrate or when your parents immigrate? You renounce all those old ties. No, he came into government specifically to assist the radical Palestinian movements to make war against Israel and to make join forces with groups that the United States has identified as international terrorist organizations. So he was on the Obama National Security Council in charge of Israel-Palestine affairs. He was chief counsel to the House Intelligence Committee under Adam Schiff. He was a lawyer for the Trump Impeachment Committee. And then Biden brought him back to the National Security Council to control all American intelligence programs.
All right, final one. Ilhan Omar has been all over the news lately with little gems like this one.
In 2016, it's election cycle, and you guys have the ability to make an impact on where our nation is headed, not only here in the United States, but even in our nation back home.
Our nation back home. You know a little bit more about Ilhan Omar than the average person. What have you found out?
She came here as a 10-year-old, but her father was a propagandist for the dictatorship that you know previously existed, Siad Barre. His doctrine was a mix of Islamism, communism, and Benito Mussolini-style fascism. Okay, so her dad is a propagandist for that regime. That regime is toppled. The Omar family comes to the United States. She grows up. She marries her brother, et cetera. We know the rest of the story. But for her, as a sitting member of Congress, to declare the country where she's formerly from, and when you take an immigration oath, even as a child, your parent takes it for you. You're bound to it. You abjure any loyalty to the previous country that you're from. You put America first. You swear to that. She could lose her citizenship over this, as she should. In addition to being expelled from Congress, because then there's another video of her more recently where she's saying in Somali, you know, she's referring to it as her country again, and the leader of the country being her uncle and he's her girl and all this other stuff. And she's saying that she's here as a member of the U.S. Congress to put Somalia first. So imagine you've got Palestine, which is not even a country, and Somalia, which is sort of the dregs of the dregs of countries. If they can penetrate the highest levels of the American government, who can't?
Oh. J. Michael, thank you, sir. His book is Big Intel, if you want to dig more into this stuff. All right. That was a lot. We need to talk about Lighten the Mood. In fact, we need to talk about something important on Lighten the Mood, and we'll do that next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right. It's time to lighten the mood. Let's talk about something. We always talk about how much the government is corrupt and horrible and a bunch of liars, right? One of the worst things the government has ever lied about is eggs. I remember when I was a kid, and for a lot of my life, people were taught that eggs are bad for you. Be careful with the eggs. Don't eat too many eggs. Have a bowl of cereal instead. Eggs are amazing. Not only are they one of the best superfoods in the world, I mean, you can just eat a dozen eggs a day and you just be healthier for it. They're delicious and they're versatile. I was thinking about it today as I was eating my eggs. I'm 42 years old. My old man loved eggs. My mom would make me eggs. So we had eggs all the time as a kid. There's never been a time in my life in 42 years where I did not eat eggs regularly. And still to this day, I sit down for breakfast. I had some scrambled eggs. My wife had chopped up some green onions and I'd put those in there and melted some cheese and a little hot sauce. My mouth's sitting there watering, eating them. 42 years of eating the same thing and they deliver every single time. Name me the food that you can eat for 42 years without stopping. The incredible, what was that ad they used to say? The incredible edible egg. Team eggs. That's what we are here on I'm Right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.